A huge shout out of thanks to our major sponsor, Pertec. If you have Pertec on your team, they will never let you down. Visit Pertec at pertec.com.au. Today I have with me Gareth Holmes, who, Gareth, first of all, thanks for coming on this show. I've tried to get you for a long time because the reason I want you on this show is you've worked in every role I can think of in professional sport or in the sport of rugby league. Yeah. And a lot of people listening to this show are also those types working in sport or teachers or trainers or coaches. Leaders, business leaders, which you're now a CEO, so you're in that business space, that administrator space, but you've done it all. You've worked as a coach, a development officer, you worked in community, you worked in marketing, you've worked across everywhere, which I'll go to. But first of all, thank you, and I want to grab people's attention with this photo. We'll edit this in. I was just looking at it now. There's a photo of you and King Charles.
King Charles, yeah.
King Charles, so... He was Prince Charles at the time. Yeah. I looked at the photo and it's like, there's three kings in this photo. There was Cameron Smith, the game's greatest ever player, captain of the Kangaroos at the time. There was King Charles, but then there was the King, Gareth Holmes. And there's three people in this shot. Can you talk me through when you're wining and dining with royalty?
Yeah. Firstly, Hayden, thanks for the opportunity. Yeah. Actually, when you asked me, I wasn't really sure whether or not my story was podcast worthy, especially
is,
with
mate.
Some of the work that you've done. I've listened to quite a few, mate, and you know, I've really enjoyed them. So thanks for the opportunity. But yeah, the opportunity with the King, well, Prince Charles at the time, I was manager of the Australian Kangaroos for 5 years.
Yeah.
In 2013, there was a World Cup in England, England, Ireland and Wales. We played the World Cup. So we were over there for the best part of 9 weeks, and part of some of the formalities of the World Cup is every nation, you know, some delegates from every nation got invited to afternoon tea at Clarence House with the Prince. We were based in Manchester at the time. That was where the Kangaroos base was, and this was in London. And I asked around, I wasn't a real monarchist, so I asked the sort of staff and crew, is anyone interested? And no one was really keen to get on the train to London for their day off. So I ended up going, obviously the captain had to go, Cameron went. And we got on the train down from Manchester to London and got to Clarence House. And I think people explained to me, oh, this is where he lives. I'm like, surely not. And it wasn't until you got in there and you got the protocols of how you had to address him and you know, certain things you had to say or couldn't say. And then you were in the what was his lounge room, I'm assuming, and there's photos of his kids and his mum and, you know, the Queen Mother on the mantelpiece, and this is his lounge room. And it sort of hit me, this is actually pretty surreal. It was an enormous experience, something that I look back on and say, you know, it's great to be able to have done something like that.
Yes.
But being in that environment, then he came down and wanted to chat to us, and really, what do you talk about? Trying to remember trying to remember the protocols.
Yeah.
About, you know, your Royal Highness and Sir and the order that all goes in. Because it basically got dropped on us right before he walked down the stairs into this function. And then what do you talk about? And it was funny, back at home at the time, we were going through some really bad bushfires in New South Wales. And he knew all about it. And he led the conversation.
Okay.
Led the conversation with, you know, are your family safe and how's it affected you and things like that. So he actually drove the conversation,
right,
which was quite unique. Asked about rugby league. He had one grandson at the time. And, you know, sort of tossed around the idea of maybe he could play rugby league for England one day because the England team were there. It was a really easy conversation in the end, as nervous as we all were. Myself, Cameron, and there was a couple of other delegates there with us. As nervous as we all were, he led the conversation. But it was pretty surreal. I think the most exciting bit for me was obviously middle of the day there, so it was nighttime here. Nighttime or the next morning here, my mum, her phone is ringing off the hook.
Yeah.
Because it was on the news back here. And my mum loved the royal family, firstly. And then her age group demographic, they were all rotten to it. Her phone, she was the proudest lady going around for about 24 hours. It was on the news, and it was really a great experience.
So Cameron, how did Cameron Smith handle this? Because I can imagine you're in Manchester. I mean, London's, what, 3 hours away by train, maybe? Yeah. So I can see why you're on a way. Players might have had a day off that day, and those World Cups are intense.
Yeah.
So I could see why you asked people, they said, no, I'm going to take a day off. But I bet you they were jealous once you got back that you met the king or the prince at the time. What was Cameron like?
H, you know Cameron, I don't think too much phases
Nothing.
Him. He finds his way through any situation, not just on a rugby league field, but off the rugby league field. Nothing phased him. He handled it really well. And I think, you know, talking to him afterwards, I think he was pretty chuffed with the whole
idea of
the surroundings that he was in.
So when you got on the train and you're heading back to Manchester, did you and Cameron say, oh, I should have asked him this, or we should have said
that? Yeah, there was a bit of that. Well, you know, and it was a little bit surreal. Like, did that just happen?
Yeah, right.
Were we just in his lounge room? And, you know, that was, it was a great experience. And you're right, when we got back and there were photos, because it was on the news on the telly over there. So everyone's in the team room back at the hotel in Manchester watching us, you know, with the prince. It was,
So the photo, which I've seen, did you actually say to someone, hey, make sure you get a picture of me and Cameron and the prince?
No.
Or someone just took it?
It just happened.
Just
happened that way.
Because that was a good photo.
That's a cracker.
That's a cracker.
That's a cracker.
You'll be showing your kids and your grandkids and their kids.
It was, I do, it does get a start every now and again, that photo pops up.
And often on this show, when we talk about someone, I call out to them, you're welcome on the show anytime. So King Cameron Charles. Smith, you're welcome anytime. I'm not sure, King Charles, if you're going to watch this episode or listen, but you're welcome anytime, King Charles. Yeah. Wow, so you said managed the Kangaroos for 5 years. That's a fair stint. So within that, there would have been 2 World Cups?
Yeah, so 2013, and I started off in 2017 World Cup, and then I sort of left the NRL.
Okay.
Sort of just before that period.
So the Australian team won both those World Cups?
Won both those World Cups. Yeah. And we went into 2013, we didn't hold the World Cup. We lost it to the Kiwis in 08, you would remember.
Yes.
We didn't hold the World Cup. We were the number 2 ranked nation. You know, we weren't going too great. And we ended up, that World Cup, quite unique. We had 1 try conceded against us in the whole tournament. And that was in the opening match in Cardiff at Millennium. England scored a try against us. We didn't concede another try for the rest of the tournament.
Wow.
Played 3 pool games, 3 finals, didn't concede another try, and ended up winning the final at Old Trafford, you know, quite convincingly in the end. It was a pretty special team.
Some of those stadiums are a fantastic experience for you, no doubt.
Wembley, Old Trafford. Yeah, we played at some great stadiums, and, you know, we played a quarter final. On the flip side, we played a quarter final at Wrexham, which was, you know, far from a great stadium in terms of what we'd experienced. But it was an enormous time over there. And to be leading a Kangaroos team or managing that program for a World Cup is something that I'm quite proud of.
Is there any lessons there? Because you just mentioned a defensive record. And to defend so well, you must be a very connected team. Mm. Any lessons there of bringing a team together? I mean, I could share, but I'm not. I want to listen to you. I've been in some very connected camps that have achieved great things, but you've just mentioned a defensive record that probably, I mean, I even forgot how good they were.
Mm.
But you need to be very connected off the field on a tour of 9 weeks, and that's a balancing act too, because they've had a big season and you've got to go away. What do you put that defence down to, apart from good players, good coaching, and what else?
I was going to say to you, I think it was, we had a great squad, we had great players, and we had some really good coaching and really good structures about how we were going to defend. Tim Sheens was the coach, David Ferner was his assistant.
Yeah.
You know, they had some really good structures around the defence side of things. When you talk about connectiveness, and I look at that team, I don't feel like they were the most connected team.
Really?
And if you think back, 2013, the Queensland Origin team were on a yeah, trajectory that we hadn't seen for such a long time. They'd won like eight or nine in a row.
Yeah.
There was a real disconnect of sorts when the Kangaroos came together.
Yes.
Between Queensland and New South Wales. So off the field, I really picked up on the disconnect at times. But when they pulled the jersey on and ran out, they were the best players in the world and they knew they were there to do a job. They knew that we weren't the number one ranked nation and we didn't hold the World Cup, and that was really important to them as a group. You could just tell how important that was. We need to get this sorted out. We're the best rugby league nation in the world and we need to get this sorted out.
Yeah.
So it was like they pulled the jersey on. You've worked with Cameron, as I said, you know, when he speaks, everyone listens, and they just were just that motivated to get it done.
Right, okay.
But yeah, you know, when you talk about connectedness, I didn't see the connectedness off the field.
Yeah.
We weren't that group that, you know, we've all been with groups that everyone just, it's a love-in, right? We've been with those groups. I didn't feel that with this group, but they just got the job done.
They obviously connected on the field.
Yeah, they got the job done. Their structures were very good, and they were great players.
Yeah. Okay. So I wouldn't mind going some lessons maybe off coaches or players you've had over time. We worked together. You were the team manager of the NRL All-Stars when Wayne Bennett coached.
Yeah.
So if I throw the name Wayne Bennett at you, what comes to mind?
Oh, I think I can't speak more highly of the man. And a lot of people outside of people that I work with him probably don't see the true man that he is.
Yeah.
I think the way that he makes you feel about who you are and the job that you do and empowers you to do your role
100%
is really a thing that I got out of it. And
and
mate, I'm a guy that's worked in rugby league for the best part of 30 years, but I'm not a former player. I'm not a, you know, I'm not a name. I'm not a profile. I'm just someone that has worked really hard, tried to maintain some good relationships, looked at opportunities when they've come up and made the best of them.
Yeah.
And hopefully my part in that has helped other people get their job done or, you know, in a team environment. But going back to Wayne, just somebody that gives you the time of day, just, you know, empowers you to do your job, genuinely cares about you and your role within getting the result.
Yes.
And, you know, I still speak to him, not frequently, but I still speak to him a little bit. He came and spoke at a Origin sportsman's lunch that we had at the Bears earlier this year. I rang him up and asked him if he would do it, and you know, he said yes, and he did a terrific job, mate. It was so good to have him. You know, that's the sort of guy he is.
Yeah.
I feel like once you sort of been within that environment with him, you've got a friend for life, but in my case, a mentor as well.
Definitely. Well, same.
Yeah.
Same. So let's go through a couple. You've worked with some great coaches. You mentioned Tim Sheens there, the Australian coach. Tim Sheens. He also coaching the 17 team with you, or had they changed?
No, Mal.
Mal? So let's talk about Tim and Mal.
Yeah, when I started at the Kangaroos, with the Kangaroos, Tim was the coach, and we went 12, 13, 14. We lost to Four Nations in 14. And then we did a big review of the Kangaroos program because results were declining a little bit, and there was going to be a transition of players, and budgets weren't where they needed to be and things like that. So we did a big review when we got an external to come in and do that. And one of the outcomes was Mal Meninga was appointed as coach.
Right.
So then worked with Mal 2016 and the start of 2017. So 2016 Four Nations. And we didn't hold the Four Nations, so we won that one back as well. So Mal Meninga and Tim Sheens at the national level. And then other coaches, you know, Brian is probably the one that sticks out with me the most for our time at Parramatta.
Yeah.
But when you go through Brian, Hagues, Daniel, you know, Matt Cameron, Brad Arthur, Steve Kearney, Shane Flanagan, Peter Sharp, Tony Smith, Alan Wilson, countless coaches. I was fortunate, Rod Reddy, Grant Jones. Right.
Yeah.
You know, I was fortunate enough to be in one place at the Eels for 15 years, but experience a gamut of coaches. Whereas a lot of people have to move around from place to place to place to get that sort of experience.
Yeah.
I got to do it by staying in one place. That's quite unique. People don't get to do that very often. But I got to pick up on lots of things. And the biggest part of that was Brian. And, you know,
Brian Smith's episode on here is going off.
Yeah.
Like, I spent some time with him. We recorded for an hour. And I'm not going to say we'll do the same today because you're very busy. But we recorded for 1 hour. And then off camera, we had our first drink together and had lunch, whatever. We spoke for another 10 hours.
Wow.
And it was gold. I wish I recorded the whole time because I mean, I was privileged to spend like 7, 8, 9 years with the guy, same as you did.
Yeah.
But that episode is just constantly getting listens every day.
Yeah, I listen to it. It's great. And I know Brian, obviously, on a personal level like you do.
Yeah.
Maybe not at the same level, but enough of a personal level. But I attribute Brian to being the reason that I'm in the role I am now.
Yeah.
A big part of that. I was coaching, doing a little bit of coaching at the Eels, development squads and junior reps, and right through to the Flegg and New South Wales Cup level as an assistant. And I think we won. I had a really good Harramatts. We won the Harramatts 1 year, and that was going really well for me. And we're at Ross Street, the Ross Street offices. Brian had that corner office that had a little balcony overlooked. And I was up there. I was working in game development with Ando, and he called me into his office, like being called into the principal's office. And I thought, what have I done? I was actually concerned. What have I done here? And he sat me down and he said, what are you doing with your coaching and everything? I said, I'm not really sure. You know, I really enjoy it. And he said, you're going okay.
Yeah.
I can see that you're going okay with your coaching, but I can also see you've got all these other skills around the operational, administrational side of the game as well.
Yeah.
And he said, at some point, you're going to have to make a decision. Do you want to be a coach or do you want to be a administrator? And I said, I don't know. He said, I'm not saying you need to answer me now, but at some point, you're going to have to make the call on that. And he said, if you want to be a coach, go jump in 2 feet. You've shown that you can, you've made a start in it. But he sort of said, there's 16 jobs here and there's probably another 13, 14 jobs in the UK.
Yeah, that's
it. If you want to be a head coach, and that's it.
Yeah.
If you want to be an administrator, you don't have to stay in rugby league. You can take that wherever you want.
Yes.
Stay in rugby league. You can take into other codes or go wherever you want. And I walked out of his office, and maybe take stock a little bit about where I was at and what I wanted to do. And I obviously pursued the administration side of sport and the opportunities that came off the back of that. But that was Brian.
Wow.
That was Brian.
I never knew that. I mean,
pulling me into his office.
He has an influence on so many careers,
mm.
including mine. But you just mentioned there what I think makes you great at what you do, because you have experienced so many roles, including coaching.
Yep.
So you know every time you work with, whether it's Mal Meninga, Wayne Bennett, or whoever it is, you know what support level they want. Yep. So that's one strength, one very big strength, similar to Matt Cameron at Penrith Panthers. But then you worked in every area, game development, in the corporate, in the... So you ended up the GM of football at Para from memory, because I want to rattle off a few clubs. You were GM of football at Manly Seagulls, GM of football at the Bulldogs. You managed Kangaroo Tours. Your last 20 years, if someone wanted to read through it, is such an experience. But this podcast is about sharing lessons that may accelerate someone else's career, following you or following in similar space. What lessons... Even just those four clubs I mentioned, as GM of football at all those four clubs, you're now the CEO of the North Sydney Bears, and there's an NRL expansion bid going on. I don't know if we can give any secrets away here, but lessons learned and comparing those.
Yeah. Ultimately, I think to really simplify it, the biggest lesson, and I get a lot of young kids saying, I want to work in sport, and how do I do that? It's about taking an opportunity, and it's about surrounding yourself in the right environments around the right people. From an operational perspective, H, you would know Dennis Fitzgerald and Greg Mitchell.
Yeah.
Probably two of the greats in terms of, understanding how to manage and run a football club. I was privileged to spend a big part of my career working with them.
What a great man, Greg Mitchell.
Greg Mitchell, yeah.
And Dennis, only saw him at a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Greg Mitchell gave me my first contract.
There you go.
Signed by Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
Like, so the two
Greg
great
employed
men
me at the
There Eagles. You go.
Yeah.
There's too many similarities going on here, but sorry to cut you off. You just mentioned a great man. So.
Yeah, so yeah. Greg and Dennis. But, I think for me it's been about you work hard.
Yeah.
In a team environment or a sporting environment, which is a team environment, it's about the work that you do, you're doing for the team.
Yeah.
I don't think you survive too long in sport when you are working in a team environment, but it's all about yourself.
Yeah. You'll survive a couple of years.
Like I said, I think, not that I've flown under the radar, but I think I've just taken the attitude that we just need to get in and get it done.
Yeah.
And how do I in my role, help
help someone else,
help with someone else, and help the team.
Yeah,
you know, that's a big thing. You know, surrounding good people, learning all the time, not just from the coaches, learning from the S&C guys, learning. Yeah. You know, we've had lots of conversations about, you know, what you're doing here and what you're doing there and how it works. Learning from the administrators, your Gregs, your Dennis's, and, you know, guys like John Hutche that you could just sit down and talk to about all
another
sorts
great
of things.
Man.
Yeah, you know, he was the leader. When you talk about player welfare, we were the leaders back then, and he was
the
man.
And the reason he was so good, because the care is so genuine.
Yeah.
Like you said, it wasn't about him.
No.
And you also mentioned a little message there to anyone, even working with junior teams, coaching kids in any sport, trying to teach players on how to be a good team player. And a good team player asks themselves, how can I help a mate?
Yep.
Teaching him that at a young age through sport, that'll help them anywhere. Like, you have that philosophy and it's helped you. You're now a CEO, and like, I can't even imagine where your career is in another 20 years. Like, you're going like this, but underlying all that is that value of being a good teammate. So anyone listening that's coaching kids or teaching or whatever, teaching those qualities of what makes a good team player.
Yeah.
Because it's funny, the pressure on people out there, the kids out there that are trying to make this team and that team and rep teams. And it's funny that people like us are busy trying to teach good team values, but they might be sitting in the car with a parent saying, you do this for you because you want to make that team. So it's funny because it's almost on one side there's a vibe of fueling selfishness in a player because they're trying to make that. But really, we're trying to create good team players that in the long run, the elite teams want good team players.
Yeah.
I mean, you need a few superstars, but good team players. And then in the workforce,
exactly, team players. Team players. Good staff members, good colleagues, people that you think, you know, I know that if I've asked this person to do this job, they're going to do it and they're going to do it really well. So I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. It's something that I've always lived by or likened to, and I saw it written on the wall last week at a football club. It's know your role and do your role.
Yeah.
That's really big, and it's pretty simple. But ultimately, if you know your job and you do the job, and the next person does the same, and the next person does the same, we're all heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
It's when you have to stop and do that. And, you know, like you said, my experience across all parts of a football club has helped me enormously. Sitting down with someone like Wayne and being able to talk footy with him.
Yeah.
He looked, you know, when we first met,
with the king of, like, King Charles, as if you can't talk with the king of coaching.
But when we can have a conversation
with anybody.
And even like Sheensy, you know, obviously been coaching for a long period of time. And when I took over the Kangaroos, you know, when I first met him, he was like, well, who's this guy? And, you know, he's just there to, you know, do the admin and get that all sorted. And then it wasn't until we'd had a few conversations, he goes, oh, he knows a little bit about footy, and he knows, you know, even when we started talking about team selections, I could say, well, you know what, I think he does this. I think this player brings this to the table.
Yeah.
And he stopped and listened because I guess I've been able to be in those environments,
listening
to people, and then being able to toss it up with I guess a little bit of credibility to say, you know, and then they're like, oh, okay, well, we can involve you more and we can utilize what you can bring.
How did you go with like budgets in high performance sport? Like talk about, I mean, I feel there's a real soft spot for the Eels in you. Like I know you're 15 years there and life member there. I feel that you've still got this love of the Eels, but you've worked at, I mean, they had a very strong club, strong leadership, big budgets. What were the other clubs like? And because that's it's a whole different world, managing staff, managing budgets, managing the whole program, managing the whole club. Is there any lessons there?
Huge. And like you said, 15 years at Parramatta, we were lucky to have the support of a Leagues club that did very well.
Yeah.
We were a football club that were, for the periods that we were both there, I think we were the benchmark rugby league club in all aspects of the game, and the only thing that we hadn't done is won a comp.
Yeah.
Juniors were great, pathways were good.
Did you have to remind me of that?
Sorry, mate, it burns me as well.
2001 grand final loss.
Burns me
the
as well.
2009 grand final loss, which which some people think Paris still won because of the Melbourne bid. Yeah. But, you know, I look at that pretty realistic. I look at it as a contest. Melbourne won the contest. I don't worry about that other stuff. And I've got so much respect for both, a lot of people in both those organisations, but there's nothing more painful than losing it.
Mm.
That's another episode. But you just had to remind me of those losses. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, the Bears just lost the New South Wales Cup Grand Final this year.
Did they?
After what was a really successful season, being minor premiers and then losing on Grand Final day in the last, I'm going to say the last 2.5-3 minutes, it was tough.
Well, actually, let me ask you, I mean, I've cut you off, but how do you feel about that 09 loss? Because the administrator in you and the whole salary cap bit they went through, I mean, there's some fans that are, you know, ruthless about Parramatta should have the trophy and all that stuff. I don't enter into any of that, but
I try not to. I think I'd probably share your opinion. We were beaten by a team on the night that we're a better team. That's the footy side of me. I don't think you can change the result.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's the way it played out for us.
But back to what you're saying.
That 09 team, you know, guys like Timmy Manor and Jared Hayne and that age group, they were my Harold Matthews. We won a Harold Matthews comp together.
That's right.
I was enormously pleased for those kids to be able to play in an NRL Grand Final. I would have loved it to win, but they were kids that came out of our junior league into our Pathways program. I was fortunate enough to coach them 03, 02, 03, 04, 03. We won a comp. They went through to play SG Ball, Jersey Flag, New South Wales Cup, play NRL.
Well, I guess that's where you're saying final. That club was a benchmark in that space.
And it was. It was a benchmark.
And then Penrith have taken over that mantle. We're sitting here at Allianz Stadium now. I currently work at the Roosters. Another great benchmark. Like, talk about in the last era.
Mm.
Like, talk about world class. Like, if you go back to back in any premiership, which the Roosters did, and world champions, world class across so many areas of their business, from their leadership through to their coaching through. And then you think Penrith the same, you know, to go back to back. That's, again, world class, and people similar to your influences out there, like Kemo. But that period at the Eels you mentioned, world class in so many ways, just those two trophies.
And that's what eluded us.
You know what? Possibly the 05 season.
Yeah.
That was a big one. Minor premiers in 05 and then to get bailed out and knocked out in the prelim. That's probably one that some Para fans look back on.
I remember.
Yeah.
I took an under-17s development squad to New Zealand on a tour.
Did you?
And we watched that preliminary final in our hotel. It was tough. It was tough to watch. But, you know, you talk about budgets before. So I think, you know, Parramatta, we were the best at everything. Pathways, welfare, community, we ticked every box. And we were lucky to have a big leagues club that supported us. You know, great sponsorship and resource. We were resource rich and personnel rich. That was great. Then I was at the Seagulls for a short time. And that's a totally different structure. Private owners, yes, putting money into the club, but you didn't have all those other bits and pieces. Staff was the NRL staff. I think there might have been 8 of us that were
running.
But it was great for me because I looked at that and I looked at Manly as a club, and they've won a comp in every decade.
Yeah.
They've been a successful rugby league club for a long period of time, and they've done it a totally different way to having the big leagues clubs and the big budgets and things like that. That was a real great learning experience. We went from, I think the year I started there, I think they'd finished 14th, and we were finished 6th the following year.
Yeah.
And it was just about again. That's your connectiveness for me.
Mm.
That time I was at Manly.
Yeah.
It was about a little bit of that mentality backs against the wall. We don't have everything that we want.
I asked Jamie Lyon once. Great man. And, you know, you would have had something to do with him back in his Eels days and his Kangaroos days. No, maybe not. You would have missed Kangaroos. But I asked Jamie Lyon once what was the secret when they won Manly, and he said that they were the most connected team off the field and on the field. And he really believed that it might have been the Tuesday night poker session or whatever it was each week was the key. And then, you know, I'd asked Rod Reddy about what was the key to your team back in 77 when you won with the Dragons. Mm. And he'd say, every Sunday, the barbecue, where every wives, partners, that was the key. So sometimes you come across teams that you see them on grand final day. The ones that win are usually very, very close, yep. The tightest team. And I'll never forget what Jamie Lyon told me about Manly.
Mm. And yeah. I saw that. That was the thing for me. That was why they were successful, or a part of, because they were very connected.
Yep.
Trent Barrett was a coach. I rate him. I rate him as a coach. I really do. Yeah. And I've worked with lots. And very technically and tactically, I thought he was, you know, one of, if not up there with some of the best that I work with.
Yeah.
And he's at Parramatta now helping Brad. But, they were a connected group, and that's what got them through. And the mentality of Manly, the area, the insular peninsula, there was a bit of that us against them, and we're going to bunker down in here and get the job done, and Fortress Brookvale and things like that. There was a bit to that.
Yeah.
And that made it hard, and they were a successful club. So you went from Parramatta, big budgets, big resource, Manly, you know, highly successful without that.
Yep.
And then the Bulldogs, again, big leagues club, you know, massive budgets, you know, whatever you needed, you got. Budgets on steroids. But, you know, at the same time, they were going through a period where they probably still are.
Yeah.
Where they just can't get it done.
Yeah.
You sort of are, if you're an outsider, you ask the question, well, you've got everything at your disposal. Why can't you get this done? What is it?
Yeah.
For me, at that time, it was a disjointed football department. There was a real feeling about the bringing back the heritage and the Dogs of War and the family club and all of that, which all worked really well for them in the 80s.
In the 80s, yeah.
But we had a different group now.
Yeah.
That whole mentality, you know, we didn't have the Hugheses and the Moores and those people there. We had all these young kids that it's a different generation.
Yeah.
And you can instill that stuff into them to a point, but if they're not going to buy into it, then it doesn't work. And maybe that's where I'm not close enough to the Bulldogs now. Maybe that's still a part of it.
Yeah.
Where are they heading?
I really believe in Cam Serrato, great coach.
Yep.
Well, like you said, you rated Trent Barrett the same. Mm. You know, I'd worked with Trent Barrett as well before he went there. So there's some challenges, obviously, but I really believe in what Ciro values.
Yep.
That. Yeah, it's there's a lot of people listening that would definitely be watching closely the progress over there, but he's one that'll stay really strong on what he believes in. Eventually I feel it'll pay him back.
Yeah.
Actually, I know it will, but I'm at an opposition club, so I can't really be pumping them up too much.
You know, it's what the game needs.
But the people he's surrounding himself with, you said it was a real disjointed staff. The people that he's surrounding himself with will be very connected.
Yeah.
Something he really believes in. And, I just know what he values, and I think you'll start to see it turn eventually. It seems like there's a bit of pain that they've had to go through to eventually get there.
Mm.
And that's the famous story in any place.
Everyone goes through it, right?
There's painful years and decisions made and people let go that pay you back down the track. And that every team that's winning premierships there'll be that story of a couple of years previously.
Mm.
You know?
Everyone gets a turn. No, you're right. I think that I don't know Cameron as well as you do, but I feel like that he is the person that can turn it.
Yeah.
It's going to be very different
to
what they're used to as a club.
Yep.
What their foundations were built on. I feel it's going to be different, but he's the one to make the change.
Yeah. What's your take on speaking to Cameras like this? On the tough times, because leaving there for you was there any lessons that how do I just bring it out and say, like, that was, you ended up having to leave a club, but like in it was a bad period for you, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And I've had some advice from great people over the years to be employable, you need to be sackable.
Mm.
Meaning, I mean, no, you don't want to go get sacked all the time,
yep.
But meaning handling it well. And because it's a small world, handling it well. I mean, you've fallen on your feet. You're a CEO now of a big organisation and Yeah, just because of what you believe in, and you're pretty true to yourself, or very true to yourself, what you believe in and your background and influences. I know you're going all the way in this space, but that must have been a hard time.
Yeah, it was. It was definitely a hard time. And, you know, I think my time at the Bulldogs, I don't think I ever felt totally comfortable while I was there in my surroundings, in my environment, and what I felt like I wanted to try and achieve.
Yeah.
And or what I felt as GM of football at the time, what I needed to do to take the footy to club to the next step, I didn't feel like I had that support within the footy department.
Right.
I had some support in other areas of the business, which was great, but I didn't gel with the coach in terms of, I feel we need to do this, and
yeah,
I think this is the way forward, and he had different ideas. And, you know, coaches live from contract to contract, right? They're very results driven, and it's for a coach that's on a short term contract, it's about here and now results, not about 2 or 3 years down the track results.
Yeah.
Whereas I was in a role where I've needed to build this footy department and build our pathways and get it back to where we were going to get results in 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
That's where I'd come from at Parramatta. And
yep.
You know, you said Camo there before, that's what he's built over a period of time.
Yeah.
We're seeing the fruits of it now, but that was a build. And I felt like the Bulldogs were that club as well. They needed that build, but coach was very driven on, I've just got to win because I'm off contract.
Yeah.
I totally get that. So yeah, it was a difficult time. I've always been a very big believer on and tried to live by, you know, focus on the things that you can control. Decisions have been made that were out of my control. You can't do anything about things you can't control. So focus on what you can. Put your time, your resource, your efforts into things you can control.
Yep.
And make the best out of those situations. The things you can't control, they're out of your hands. What you can't, the part that you can is how you react to that.
Yep.
How you react to the things you can't control is within you, but you can't control the outcome sometimes. So I treated that as an opportunity to, I've been in rugby league for a long time. I had, like yourself, mate, we sacrifice a lot of stuff by working in sport.
Yeah.
Family, time, all the things there. So I took a bit of time to take a breath, tried to exit the best way I could. It was important that I still, I got to where I've got to by working hard and maintaining good relationships. And I still, that was really important to me to keep doing.
Yeah.
It wasn't about trying to, break.
Yes.
Break relationships and go rogue and think this is all wrong and I've been hard done by here. The decision was made. That was out of my control.
Yeah.
How do I react to that? I've still got to get a job. I've still got to position myself in where I want to go next.
Yeah.
What does that look like for me? I love the game. I love working in the game. Is there an opportunity for me? Yep, there was, and I got to do a few other little projects.
Yep.
Which.
Yeah, well, I saw you were consulting for the International Rugby League at the last World Cup.
Yep.
I think I bumped into you at, what stadium did I bump? I bumped into you somewhere over there.
Huddersfield.
So you handled that time pretty well, but it would have been, I just thought I'd wonder, like, because sometimes I ask people, what's it like sacking someone? It's the hardest thing.
Mm.
No one wants to do it.
No.
Sometimes you have to do it.
Yeah.
And then also, what's it like being sacked?
Yeah.
It's sometimes the hardest thing, you know?
Yeah.
And then were there any people that reached out to you immediately to say, mate, got your back?
Yeah, lots of people did.
Yeah.
Lots of people did. And people that I really respect and, people that I've spent the best part of my rugby league career working alongside. I think that gave me that little bit of assurance that everything was going to be okay as well.
Yeah.
You know, you feel like you do a good job and you know the space, but, you know, when you get sacked, it's like, I've done something wrong.
Yeah.
But not necessarily the case. It was, I just didn't fit.
Yeah.
At the time, you know, the Bulldogs went through a tough bit and I didn't fit in what the coach wanted to do moving forward.
Yeah.
And that was the outcome. Yeah. He wanted to surround himself with his people. It gave him a level of protection by doing that.
Yep.
I don't begrudge that.
No.
We've all seen that.
Yeah.
So I felt like with the people that reached out to me, it gave me that little bit of confidence that you're still doing a good job and you'll be okay.
You'll be okay, yeah.
And then, again, control what you can control and put yourself in the best situations and the best conversations to try and work out what's next.
So CEO now of the North Sydney Bears are a club with a lot of history,
yeah,
going through the expansion bid. How are we going? Can I drop any exclusives on here? It's all very, I've noticed it's very secretive.
Yeah.
I've seen you in this CEO role and honestly very impressed. I saw you watching junior rep footy. Like there's the CEO of the club getting out there, very connected with your people in your club. I watched you from a distance. I saw you at a junior reps game, which is pretty impressive for a CEO to care so much. But this expansion bit, are the North Sydney fans listening ever going to see a North Sydney Bears team back in the NRL?
Yeah.
We'll just cut that there. You said, yeah. You hear that, producer?
I was going to say, listen, firstly, my time at the Bears, I've been there for 2.5 years now. I've loved absolutely every minute of it.
Yeah.
I'm at a footy club with a really proud history, a foundation club, you know, over 115 years in the game. I've got a tremendous supporter base, people that are really staunch bolted on rugby league fans, and all clubs have got them. But these guys are also long-suffering rugby league fans.
Yes,
the team's been
out
for a long period of time. What I've been able to create there in a short period of time, we deliver a really great game day. You know, our brand's still very strong at that level. I'm loving the fact that we're not an NRL team yet, but I'm able to put influence on this footy club to get us ready in certain parts. So our game day experience, our membership, we're building that. You know, we looked at pathways and our junior league numbers increase year on year. We've got a really strong merchandise program. We're a really small staff and I'm really blessed that I've got a small staff, but a very good and passionate staff, and everyone goes above and beyond and does the job that needs to be done in comparison. And what we've been able to deliver with a small staff and a small budget is pretty extraordinary. And sometimes I've got to take stock and I want to do all these things and run it like an NRL club, but it's not just yet. But, you know, we're doing some really good things in that space. Our pathways are good. Our junior reps are going well. To touch on the expansion stuff, it's quiet at the moment. Interestingly, there was a lot of talk about the 18th team for a long period of time, sort of since the Dolphins came in.
Yep.
But more recently, there's talk about 18, 19 and 20. So I think that's where
the
game's
heading. You're telling me there's a chance.
Yeah, I'm telling you there's a chance. There's definitely a chance. We're working really hard trying to position ourselves to be part of the expansion, whether it's 18, 19 or 20. I'd love nothing more than to be able to bring the Bears back. There's a lot of moving parts. The NRL are sort of doing a lot of stuff in the background, and as a club, you know, we're waiting on some guidance.
Yep.
We're working really hard now to be in a position that when the NRL come and say, this is what we want from 18 or 19 or 20, we're in a position to say, we can give you that.
We've got it.
We've got it. Yeah. And what do we have right now? We're a proud foundation club. I've got over 1,000 graded players, which is great.
Yeah.
115 years of history. A strong junior league that sees year on year increase. I've got a strong membership base. I've got a Leagues Club group. They've got 8 venues that are financially backing what we're doing. So, you know, proud history. We've got all these things here that we're already an established brand.
Yeah.
We're an established footy club. It's like we understand that we might not be the North Sydney Bears. And when I started, we did a little rebrand and we took the words North Sydney out of our logo. We're the Bears.
Yep.
Because we know that we're not, the reality is we're not going to be the North Sydney Bears.
Yeah.
We are flexible and fluid enough where we are at the moment to be wherever the NRL wants us to be. And that's the toughest part, is not having a location to latch onto. But at the same time, we feel like that's the best way for us to be now. In when the NRL come and say, here we go, well, you've got everything other than an NRL team.
Yeah.
Let's just do this and move it here or partner with this area and be the Bears. And we've got some, you know, that we're a proud club. We've got some non-negotiables that are important to us. We want to have a presence at North Sydney Oval still. We want to play games at North Sydney Oval. We want to be the Bears. We want to be red and black.
Yep.
There's some things that are important to us
as
we move forward. And if we partner with another area or with another group, they're the things that are important to us and we will stand fast in those things.
Yeah.
It's exciting, but it's frustrating at the same time. And there's a lot of Bears fans that are probably sharing my frustrations that it's probably, in our eyes, moving a little bit slowly, but we also know that there's a process.
Yeah, okay.
And we just need to be ready. And we feel like what we're doing is getting ourselves ready to be what the NRL needs us to be.
Well, you are ready. I mean, you are ready. When I've just from watching from an outside, you're even building up this. There's fans out there that still love. They go and follow your New South Wales Cup team like you. And you have, the big thing is you have those licensed venues. Like you've got, you've got the budgets on steroids.
We're working on them.
You got the budgets on steroids, but you also you got the right people. You got a genuine passion for it. I'd see when you mention your staff that they all go over and beyond. That's what I've seen observed of you as a CEO, going over and beyond. Like, just from an outsider looking in, Bears are ready. I have no idea what the NRL thinks in this space, but you've been a feeder team to the Roosters the last few years in the New South Wales Cup. Jason Taylor was coaching. I was observing that.
Yep.
And now you're linked with Melbourne Storm, another great, strong club.
It's great for us.
Which probably gives away what you said earlier in the episode. You were in a football club recently and you saw the words on the wall that said, know your role and own your role. So if I picture Melbourne over the years...
That's them.
That's them. Yep. Cameron Smith, Cooper Cronks, Billy Slaters, those types just know their role. And they get everyone around them to know their role.
Yeah.
So... I knew when you mentioned that before where you'd been visiting, you must have spent some time there recently. Mate, let's finish by just name dropping a few players over the years and just think of what comes to mind. You mentioned coaching some of them, so I'll bring some of them up, and then you've worked at clubs with some of them. Let's go. Jared Hayne.
Enormous talent from a, I don't know, when I first saw him, I think he might have been 11 or 12 years old.
Did you really?
Yeah, he came through.
Early.
He's playing footy at Cabramatta, Cabramatta Junior Rugby League Club, and came through our development squads. And just an enormous talent, freakish talent.
Mate, anyone who hasn't watched it, just go Google, YouTube, the 09 highlight package of Jared Hayne. And then his journey, his what he did making that NFL was incredible when everyone said he couldn't do it. So
we played he was in our SG Ball team, I remember, and he'd been out long term. He'd been out the best part of a season with an injury. I can't remember what the injury was. His return game, we were playing SG Ball, and I think we might have been playing the Roosters at Henson Park.
Yeah.
And he didn't start. He came off the bench, and probably 10, 15 minutes in, he came in, and basically off a play, his first touch, he ran the length and scored a try. Yeah. And he'd been out of the game for
six months.
Oh,
NRL.
It was crazy.
Tim Menner.
Yeah. He for me, is the guy that just got to where he got to out of having a bit of talent, but just a real hard worker. He, one of the nicest guys you'll ever come across in rugby league. Lovely kid, lovely family. Again, a local kid. It was so pleasing to see him come through as a local kid. Came out of Guildford and played through their junior rep program, and then get an NRL debut, and then played Origin. Just a great kid. But he was a player that got to where he got to because he just worked hard.
Well, those stories were filtering through to us way before we ever met him. Was like running around Parramatta Park with Craig Brennan, who was a junior staff member with genuine care for his players, who was a teacher of his at maybe Parramarist.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, no, Tim didn't go
Tim
there.
Didn't go to Marist,
Craig Brennan was a teacher at Parramarist. Great coach now. Yeah. That was a conditioner back in the day.
Yeah.
We would hear stories of them two running around Parramatta Park and hard work and, great fella, Tim. Let's go through a couple more. Daniel Mortimer.
Yeah. Being involved with Morts as a young kid, we'd come in out of Orange on a Friday.
Yeah.
Might get a captain's run in, play, and then he was still going home.
Go home to the winery.
Yeah.
Work on the farm.
Played above his weight at every level of the game.
Yeah.
Like he was a little kid, but an enormously talented, great young kid. Great family again, good values.
100%. Good values. Lives those values. Great kid, great family, great upbringing, great work ethic. Anyone will want that type of player in their team. And he ended up coming to the Roosters and winning a premiership.
That's great.
Yeah. Okay, so we've rattled off a few Nathan Hindmarsh.
Yeah, my time with Hindy was probably really towards my close time with Hindy was towards the back of when I was head of footy there at Parramatta. I had a bit more to do with him. But interestingly, the year I started at Parramatta was the year that he debuted, and the year that I left Parramatta was the year that he retired. So I saw his whole career, his whole first grade career, during my time at Parramatta.
And worked with his wife,
Bon. Worked in game development when I was a development manager at the club, and worked with Bon there for a number of years.
Haven't they kicked off? Yeah, Three Bird Renovations. Google those. Yeah. Instagram, Three Bird Renovations.
Done a great
Bonnie,
job.
You're welcome on the show anytime.
Exactly. Yeah,
haven't they done great? Nathan Kalis.
Yeah.
Ultimate leader.
Yeah.
Ultimate pro, but I want to hear Your thoughts?
For me, again, ultimate leader, yeah, to captain not just his club, he captained his country at such a young age as well. Just had those leadership qualities, the sort of bloke that led by his actions. For me, that's the thing that stood out for me watching Nath.
Yeah.
Was he led by his actions, not necessarily always by his words.
Yeah.
And again, I think he was that player that had talent, but wasn't blessed with it.
Yeah.
Just worked really hard.
Best kangaroo tourist that you loved working with as a player? You were the manager of the team, but give me a player that you loved touring with and why.
Cooper Cronk. Yeah, oh, listen, there's so many. There's such a...
Let's stay at Cooper.
That 2013 team, there were some really great guys there. Sam Thaiday, like, I just spent my whole time laughing around Sam and some of those guys. But Cooper Cronk, I just watching him, how that he prepared himself for a game and the way that he was very selfless around the team, very selfless around the staff, just really impressed me. It's the sort of guy he is. He gives his time up for people. He's that, for me, the person that he knows his role is to do his pit for everybody else. And that's what I loved. So on field and in around that footy environment, Cooper Cronk. And for me, I don't think you can meet a nicer guy as well. And then outside of that team environment, like I said, Sam Thaiday, I think I laughed the whole time I was there for 9 weeks, just in and around Sam. Sam and Thurston together, there was a constant laugh fest.
You got to have that.
Yeah. Guys like Matt Scott, that big old school front rower out of country Queensland. You love rugby league. You love those qualities in people, right? Matt Scott, Nate Miles, Greg Bird. Greg Bird was a guy that I really enjoyed his company. And he was an old school footballer too. He didn't mind having a beer during the week or
really?
The night before a test match. He might just sneak into we'd have a staff meeting before dinner. We'd have a staff meeting before dinner and it was basically for me just to get the staff together and say, we all sweep for tomorrow. And we'd have a beer before we would then go back to the hotel and have dinner with the team. And midway through that tour, he got wind of this staff meeting that was happening.
He'd
turn up at the pub and have a schooner, then go back and have dinner with the team. But and he could do it. He knew his body.
He knew, and he
delivered. I enjoyed it.
We're not recommending that, everyone. No, but we're not. Good stories.
That was a good story. Yeah. Lots of good.
Well, and then staff, like I think, you need all those types in a team. You need it the same with your staff.
Yeah.
So, like, you think of the Cooper Cronk, so detailed, so thorough, so professional, so selfless. And in your staff, you had someone like Craig Catterick.
Yeah, good.
Like, doing, that's him.
Yeah.
He's the Cooper Cronk as a staff member.
Of course. And for me.
And then you'd have the character, like an Alfie Langer.
Yeah.
Like every group needs all these different types of people. There's someone that's responsible for setting the energy for the day.
Yeah.
There's someone setting standards. Yeah, it's
you mentioned Cat, good friend of yours and mine, and he epitomises for me, especially during my time at the Kangaroos, if I needed something to get done, and I asked Cat to do it, I just could walk away from it and know that it was...
100%.
It was invaluable. It's invaluable.
Yeah.
He's a great man, Cat, and we still speak to him a bit, and... I really enjoyed not just what he brought to the team dynamic, but he's a guy that I just enjoyed his company as well.
Well, let's finish with this then. We'll just go to your highlight. It's been a long career so far and there's a long way to go. There's little lessons in amongst this chat, which is pretty cool, which is what it's about.
Yeah.
But is there a highlight? Hit us with a highlight over this time. Besides meeting the King,
I think... At the highest level, winning a World Cup final at Old Trafford with the team that we had, conceded one try, we won the World Cup back, we would then reclaim the world number one world ranking. That's definitely a highlight in terms of being at the very top end of the game. I guess the other highlight for me has been big part of the Eels for a long period of time and a big part of their pathways for a long period of time is watching guys like Tim Manor, Jarryd Hayne, Chris Keating, Trent Hodkinson come through from being a local kid in the junior league and getting their NRL debut. I know you're really big on debuts, H. So debut. I love that. I love the fact that I've been able to be a part of their rugby league journey at some point, and then they've gone on and I'm not the reason they played first grade or played for their country or their state, but I've been a part of that. But to see the success of that, that's definitely a highlight for me as well. And then now to be able to run into these guys at the footy and they're walking around with their own kids. These kids were kids when I coached them.
Yeah.
But, you know, you see them and they've got their own kids that were their age, and just to be able to still talk about stuff. And that's definitely a highlight for me, seeing that, being around some of the world's best players in the game at those different times, All-Stars teams, Kangaroos teams, in and around the Origin space, both working with Queensland and New South Wales. Lots of highlights.
Yeah.
It's hard to...
Well, mate, well done on all of it, but well done on one bit you just mentioned, because that would definitely relate to a lot of listeners, and that is having an influence on a lot of those lives. So to the point where when you do bump into them now, the relationship there, that effect you've had on their life somewhere has been pretty powerful. So well done on that, and thanks heaps for coming and sharing all this, mate.
Thank you. It's been great.
We'll catch up again soon.
Yeah, well appreciate done, it.
Some of the best learning you will ever do will be talking and listening over a beautiful glass of red, which brings me to thanking our sponsors at Mortimer's Wines. Mortimer's are a family-owned vineyard in the beautiful region of Orange, New South Wales, Australia. Their historic 150-year-old schoolyard building that is now the cellar door, it provides a great atmosphere to taste their fine wines. Visit mortimerswines.com.au. Some of the best learning you will ever do will be travelling. Give yourself space, time to creatively think, to learn, to meet people, or take a vacation with your family. Give yourself that time. And there's no better person or people or company to help you than the people at Tripadeal. Their experienced agents will look after you from start to finish. They will plan your flights, your accommodation, your car, your excursions, whatever you need. If you want to plan a trip of a lifetime, Tripadeal is the place to go. Tripadeal.com.au.